I call Christianity the one great curse, wrote Friedrich Nietzsche. The one great intrinsic depravity, the one great instinct of revenge for which no means are venomous enough or secret subterranean and small enough. I call it the one immortal blemish upon the human race. This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, and you're listening to the After Dinner Scholar from Wyoming Catholic College. That Nietzsche's point of view is incompatible with the vision, values, and mission of Wyoming Catholic College should come as no surprise to anyone. And the same can be said of thinkers such as Jean-Jacques Rousseau, Sigmund Freud, Martin Heidegger, and Michel Foucault. Yet Wyoming Catholic College students read all of them and more. And that makes sense, since no one can understand our modern culture without confronting these thinkers. Which brings up the question of how to read them, how to read any thinkers with whom we disagree. Dr. Tiffany Schubert has spent a long time thinking about how to read charitably, receiving even harsh and abrasive authors with kindness and sympathy. I asked Dr. Schubert how she defines charitable reading.
So I like to tell my students that according to Scripture, we are commanded to love our neighbors. We're also commanded to love our enemies as well. And nowhere in Scripture does it say that either our enemies or our neighbors have to be alive. So in that sense, Scripture covers it all and would include most of the authors that we read. So I see charity as a universal command given to all of us to be extended to all other human beings. And I think that includes authors as well. Mm-hmm. Now, when you're thinking about how to read charitably, I think we have to remember the role that language and spoken and written communication plays in human relationships. Right? So human relationships are founded on speech, on language. And the better the speech, the clearer the speech, the more intimate it is, the closer the relationship is. So when someone speaks to you, to listen to that person with patience and justice is an act of charity. You are being charitable towards that person who is using language to establish a relationship. And I think this applies certainly, of course, to all of our personal relationships. But I think it also applies to the books that we read. Sometimes forget that those books are written by human beings who are attempting to communicate and want to be listened to, want to be attended to. So charity demands that we do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was in What is Literature by Jean-Paul Sartre. I looked for it. I couldn't find the quote where he talks about when you pick up a book, there's an implied agreement that you will listen to this person who has written the book.
That's right. That's right. And that's, I think, a kind of contractual way of rendering what I'm arguing about charitable reading. Is sort of you submit yourself to the world that the author is creating for that time. You submit to it as thoroughly and completely as you can in all parts of the person.
Let's look at a couple of examples. We read Martin Luther, whose words set off a great revolution in the Protestant Reformation. And then we read René Descartes, whose cogito ergo sum set off a great revolution in modern ways of thinking. Tell us something about what's an uncharitable approach and what would a charitable approach look like and sound like?
So an uncharitable approach to both of those authors, or to any authors that we don't like, would be to go in looking for the places where the author makes a slip up. And again, it's good to be attending to sound logic. But if we go into an author looking for those places to catch them out, sort of find the inconsistencies or the poor reasoning, and that's our main focus, that's, I think, profoundly uncharitable. Because then we're only going to be focusing in on the weakest parts or the parts that we are already predisposed to disagree with, and we don't actually encounter the author for who they are. So genuine charitable reading, I think, is to put aside our preconceptions and our prejudices and our sense of what's right and what's wrong, and try to enter into the text as fully and completely as we can. So with someone like Luther, who does, from any perspective that you take, right, causes divisions within the church, I think that you have to enter into the religious turmoil that he himself is experiencing. And this is a turmoil that we see in his works, so I'm not necessarily saying we have to do a whole lot of biographical research about Luther, but we can see in his works a man who is profoundly unsettled by his own inadequacies and struggling to find some certainty and hope in his faith. And if we can see Luther being motivated, right, and animated by the very human motivations, then it helps us enter into his work more thoroughly. The same with someone like Descartes, who seems to very much unsettle so much of philosophy and to really question the authorities and the traditions as they have been handed down to us. And if we see Descartes as someone, and he talks about himself this way in his discourse, as someone who is confused by the competing traditions that he himself is receiving in school. He talks about the fact that all these philosophers have been thinking about everything you could possibly think about, and nobody has said the same thing. So how do you know? How do you know what's true? How do you know what's certain? And that is one of the questions that then animates his project. So if we can see the human motivations, see the questions that are animating these authors, I think that really goes a long way to helping us read them charitably. Mm-hmm.
But doesn't reading charitably, you know, seeking to have sympathy for the author and enter into the ideas, doesn't that open us up to error and to being led astray by their ideas?
Yeah, the element of danger in reading. And yeah, that's certainly there, though I would actually argue that that's the excitement of reading, is the possibility of not error, but of being changed and being unsettled and being led in surprising new ways. That's one of the reasons to read charitably, is so that you can be open to being led. And in terms of the sort of fear of being led astray and led into error, there seems to me wisdom and prudence involved in what you read, but probably more importantly, when you read it. So everybody knows that you're not going to give, you know, really, really violent, disturbing literature to a toddler. But someone in college or out of college has the intellectual, emotional, spiritual, imaginative maturity to handle some of these really difficult and challenging texts, and maybe even needs them.
Mm-hmm. It's to unsettle where they are.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Those of us who see our lives as a pursuit of truth know that you never come to full truth, and you're constantly looking back at the truths that you have arrived at, not necessarily in this perpetual agonizing state of doubt, but when you have new truths that come in, you reevaluate the old ones to see, right, how they all work together. So it's this constant intellectual journey, adventure, right, quest that you're on, and reading those works that challenge us invigorate the quest.
Now, what challenges do our students here at Wyoming Catholic face in trying to read charitably?
What I've seen from our students is an earnest desire to seek the truth, which is laudable. But sometimes that actually gets in the way of reading charitably. Maybe qualify that a little bit. A premature search for truth when you're reading can actually close you off from discovering the exhilarating, dazzling, enriching, unsettling new truth that the author has to present. Because sometimes you go into a work simply looking for where the author agrees with you. Mm-hmm. How do I know that the author is true? Ah, okay, what's those passages that I think, oh yeah, I'm in complete agreement with those passages. And sometimes what that does is shut us off from those other passages, or there's other moments, or there's other characters where the author presents something that's more challenging to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of internet reading. The way we read the internet tends to be we scan things for the stuff we're looking for, rather than really reading and listening to what's being said.
That's right. Yeah, this question of reading has individual elements, but it also has communal, social, and political aspect to it as well. When you're reading, you're entering into a community of, you're entering into a community of the dead, but also that community of the dead is very much shaping, right, the whole community of the living as well. And if you close yourself off from certain elements of that community, then you're really in danger of isolation and detachment from the community that you also are called to love.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you and other faculty encourage students to read charitably, and what sort of progress do you make?
So one thing that I have been talking to my students about this semester is seeing reading as a kind of play acting. So Shakespeare, as all students of Shakespeare know, he uses the stage as a metaphor for, well, everything. At one point, at the end of The Tempest, Prospero talks about the whole world will dissolve and vanish just as a play dissolves and vanishes. So I've been taking Shakespeare's image of play acting and presenting that as a way for students to think about what they're doing when they're reading charitably. Is they're taking on a role. You're taking on the role of the text, the role of the author. And you're seeing what it's like to think like Descartes, to live and feel like Luther. You're adapting their understanding of the world. And I like the image of play acting a lot because I think it both encourages that full surrender that charity demands, or the sort of entering into the world, but then it also allows you to get out, because a role is a temporary thing. We take on roles and then we take them off. And sometimes it is good and wise to get out of a work. Not all works are as good as others, or have as much truth as others. But we best discover that by playing that role. So that's how I've been trying to present it to the students. And they're really eager and enthusiastic about it. So I think that they want to read charitably, right? They want their ideas to be challenged and refined and pushed, right? To be deeper and richer, and yeah, to not enclose themselves in isolated bubbles, right? Where we're all just sort of reading things that confirm our biases, that, you know, soothe our troubles, that give us answers to questions that we already agree with. They want something more.
Someone once observed that we should all have two best friends. One who will agree with us most of the time on most every subject, and another who will disagree with us most of the time on most every subject. One to make us feel good about our point of view, and one to make us think long and hard about what we believe. Authors like Rousseau, Nietzsche, Martin Luther, René Descartes can be like that second friend, challenging our ideas and helping us to hone what we believe as iron sharpens iron. And you know, if the idea of friends sharpening each other appeals to you, why not join us here in Lander this June 9th to 14th for the annual Wyoming School of Catholic Thought? Our topic is No Greater Gift, Friendship from the Iliad to Facebook. You can get details on our website, wyomingcatholic.org. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tunkowicz.